Hi everyone, it's Kevin J, the best thing since daylight, and you're listening to the Therapy Suite right here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. This week, I speak to Father Benjamin about mental well-being. Welcome to the show, Father Benjamin. How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you, Gavin. Thanks so much for inviting me. It's a great treat and a privilege. Thanks.
And thank you very much to yourself. You know, I know how busy you can be. We've known each other for quite a while now, isn't it? So, you know. Look, let's start with, I think our listeners would love to hear a bit about yourself and how you got to where you are today.
Well, that's a nice question. When you just mentioned you were going to ask me that, Gavin, I remembered someone, funnily enough, on a radio program I heard some years ago, but it stuck in my mind. And he was asked about his life and I think how he got there. And he replied, well, when I look back on my life, I can see a plan. I can see a clear plan, but it wasn't my plan, he said, which I thought was rather nice. You know, and I think that, you know, we set off day by day, don't we, with a kind of hope and an order, and that we do our bit, but then something shapes our lives. So how I got here, so that's a bit about the overall scheme. Well, what is it that kind of motivates one through life? What is it that leads us? Well, I suppose I hope it's a kind of love, really, of something, isn't it? Love of life, love of people, and that love is expressed in different ways at different times. You know, when, you know, at certain times one's fascinated by other people. You know, it could be a love relationship. One falls in love a lot. I think from quite an early age, I was interested in seeing particularly pictures and looking at nature. I grew up in a rather kind of lonely feeling childhood and house, but nature, we had a great garden and nature was important, the comfort. And so nature and the surroundings, people, I think these are rather abstract terms. So streams through my life have been art. I think from an early age, dreams at night were interesting to me. I mean, I grew up in a rather odd household where dream psychology was part of the background, but I think even despite or with that, dreams have been important. That, you know, I was glad to find they occur in the Bible too often. I mean, the Bible came much later, we have dreams, don't we? We have a kind of dreams. You may have dreamed of being a broadcaster once. Did you ever dream of that, Gavin?
Yeah, you know what? It's a good question. I don't think I have.
I mean, there's different kinds of dreams. There's dreams at night and dreams during the day, aren't there? And
we call both dreams. Right. That's correct, yes.
And some we choose more, and the dreams that come at night are not chosen. So I went to art school sometime after being at school, and you know, I think through my life, really, I think kind of loneliness has been there, and I think my life has been shaped in some ways by responding to that, and some ways have been creative, and I think, you know, finding meaning in one's life day by day. I think making pictures really has been a theme really for 50 years now, really. You know, I've done some picture making most days. I mean, not necessarily great pictures, but I think it's a way of responding to life, really. I don't think that's kind of answer you were looking for, probably. But so I think, I mean, later on, that picture started to include some sense of God, really, I think. Not till I was in, you know, halfway through my life so far, till I was, no, late 20s, I moved to Dorset, away from my family. My parents, I mean, quite a long way away. And there I started going to church for the first time. I hadn't had any contact with church and not much formal contact with Christianity before. And it seemed, that seemed to fit. I was living in very rural Dorset on a dairy farm. And funnily enough, I remember now quite early on in my church going in this little village church, the preacher described the life of a priest he knew, a preacher, and I found myself thinking, oh, I'd like to do that. And strangely enough, how many years on, about 10, 15 years on, I was doing it. I mean, you know, I didn't sort of set off to do it, but it obviously was a sort of picture.
Brilliant. I mean, I think each their own, isn't it, Father Benjamin? We all kind of have our own paths, isn't it? I mean, I've heard various stories of how people, you know, either got into a certain career or, you know, business or whatever it might be. And, you know, some people from a young age, they kind of, as you said, they dream that that's what they want to be. They daydream as well. I think daydream's a good one about what they want to do. But yeah, it's interesting. Each their own. It's interesting to hear about, you know, how you, you know, came to where you are today, you know. Let's start with, I mean, what's your idea of mental well-being? I think that's a good question.
Well, I can tell you, Gavin, that's quite strange, isn't it? Well, mental well-being, I suppose we were planning to have this interview about 10 days ago originally, and then things delayed it, didn't they? And it occurred to me then that, so Christians at that time, well, many Christians at that time were in a part of our annual cycle called Holy Week, which is where we remember the days of Jesus' suffering and death before we then celebrate his resurrection at Easter. And it occurred to me, I think when you suggested something like that, and I was thinking about mental well-being in preparation for the interview, I suddenly realized that, I suppose, I don't know about for Christians, but I suppose for myself, ultimately, we see mental well-being in the life and way of Jesus. And I thought, well, what does that mean? That's a weird thing to say, isn't it, really? And he was deeply related. I mean, he was perfectly related to the source of life, which Christians and many people call God. He had a great capacity for joy and a great capacity for suffering. And I suppose that can all be summed up in a great capacity for loving God, loving other people. And in so doing, I think, loving himself, really, because to do what you're called to do, to love fully is in a way to become truly oneself. And that is in a way the best way of caring for oneself, to be oneself, isn't it, which we hear about.
Absolutely, yeah, no, that's fair enough. You know, I think that people must have their own, for me, mental well-being would be, you know, someone that they're able to carry out their kind of daily lives, you know, good circle of people around them, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, it's kind of trying to keep it simple, I suppose, just trying to keep things a bit simple. Life's complicated, isn't it? Life's complicated.
Well, it's interesting you say that, isn't it? Because when people say, oh, life is so complex, and I think, well, it is, but it's also very simple in some ways. So you're saying it's simple too. Yeah. I think it's both, isn't it, really?
It is. Yeah. I mean, I think it can be a combination. Absolutely. I agree with that.
I mean, one of the big differences between the two parts of the Bible, the old and the new, in the old part of the Bible, there's lots. It's quite complicated. People understood God requiring lots of particular things he asked them to do. That was their perception of God in some ways. And I mean, although even then they were summed up in just 10 commandments, which is not very many, is it really? But Jesus himself simplified things further by saying, they're just two, it's all summed up in two things: to love God with your whole being, with everything you are and everything you have, and to love your neighbor as yourself. So that is quite simple, isn't it? I mean, yeah. I'm thinking, while we're warming up this interview, I was thinking of Freud. I think he said the two important things are to love and to work. Someone reminded me recently that what's missed out when people repeat that is that under to loving was to have a healthy sex life. I think he means to have a healthy kind of relationship with one's body and one's senses as well, you know.
Absolutely, yeah, no, fair enough. Have you heard anybody else give their point of view of what their idea of, you know, mental well-being is and that kind of thing?
Well, I think we do gain that as we go along, don't we? I mean, to be well mentally means, so I suppose if we think of physical well-being, we think of people who can relax, but also can be energetic in very many ways, can perform various functions, can run, can walk. Well, I mean, if we think of someone with a disability, they can be either well, I mean, someone who maybe have to use a wheelchair, they can be well in that wheelchair, or they can be poorly, can't they? I mean, they can be healthy in that wheelchair. I mean, it's not the wheelchair that's important, isn't it? So I think it's within one's capacities to be able to live fully, really, isn't it? And
yeah,
people have different capacities mentally and physically, I think. But I think to be able to live to the full what we've been given, you know, is is it, isn't it, really? And someone can have a very big, potentially strong body and sit around and not live it. And someone can have be more frail, grow up, or have a quite serious disability, but actually live a very healthy life within that capacity. You know what I mean? So it's the same is true mentally. Yeah. You know, someone could be born with, you know, a severe brain damage and yet live, you know, a very full and loving life within that capacity, while someone with great intellect and, you know, apparently much greater capacity could waste it in a way. Do you know what I mean? So it's really, it's not what we've got. It's what we do with it, really. It's important, how we live.
Is it, I suppose it's how we see things, how perspectives.
You know, that's exactly what I was preaching about yesterday, how we see things. Yeah. And it's seeing with our whole being. That's what I was talking about, really. It's not, you know, it's, you know, at one point I said to them, you know, I was saying, it's not seeing us with our eyes. We were thinking about Thomas, who demanded to see Jesus' wounds after he was raised from the dead. To, you know, unless you prove it, let me see, I won't believe. And we were talking about believing without seeing. And so I said to them, I said, do you see what I mean? Talking about seeing. And I said, if you don't, close your eyes and you might be able to see what I mean. So there's different kinds of seeing, aren't there? And yeah. I think, where were we? I've lost my track. Sorry.
I basically was talking about other people's views.
Yeah.
Have you heard of other people's views and how they view mental well-being? But you've said a good few points, you know.
How do you see it, Gavin? And you said being able to, you know, connect well socially with people around you.
Well, just the person, you know, they're able to carry out their day-to-day activities. They feel good within themselves.
Yeah.
You know, they've got good people around them, that kind of thing. You know?
I think being able to give is important, isn't it? And to be able to receive, to be able to speak and to listen, to show sympathy and compassion for other people is important.
Definitely.
Know, and I think to be able to give oneself, really, and one can do that mentally, can't one, by, you know, entering into someone else's life, listening to them, understanding them, seeking to.
Of course, absolutely. I mean, a lot of people get a lot of joy out of giving because they feel that they're helping. You know, when you get a good feeling, don't you, when you help people? Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
You kind of feel needed in a way. You kind of feel that you're making a difference to people's lives and society.
Yeah.
And you know, on that kind of wavelength. And I'm sure you must feel that because you must have a lot of people that talk to you, either day to day or whenever that might be, about, you know, how they're doing in their lives. Do you get that kind of thing where people talk to you about what they might be finding challenging or, you know, that kind of thing?
Not quite in a direct way as much as you like, but as much as you might think. You know, I think some parish priests working in some places might, but I think, I mean, for instance, I was walking through a local community yesterday, and there was a group of young people. You know, around here, a lot of people are keeping Ramadan at the moment, as you know.
Yep.
And so these were a group of young people in their 20s, and hello, Giza, they said to me, and they engaged me in quite a deep conversation about Jesus, funnily enough. I mean, I said to them at the end, you know, you're preaching more, you'll probably have a job, because he was preaching very much, he was very much talking about Jesus, how much he loved Jesus. And I think while I was listening to him, I could feel this great passion, this great interest in his subject, but I was feeling also that he was quite, not anxious exactly, but quite revved up, talking to the Rev. And so I think people don't always say, you know, you know, I'm feeling stressed, but they may sound stressed. I may be sounding stressed myself now. You know what I mean? So we don't always communicate our mental state. We don't always know what it is, do we? We communicate it, you know, through various ways, our body language, our tone of voice, you know, the rate at which we speak, and many other ways. We communicate in all sorts of ways, don't we, really?
No, totally. Do you think mental well-being includes, as well as the person themselves, it means family and community, society, the world, the whole thing?
I think certainly these, I mean, it's a two-way thing, isn't it? I think all those affect our mental state, and we also contribute to them, I think. And, you know, I was thinking, you know, I think, so, I mean, obviously it's a sort of not given, but I mean, you know, many people have shown us how, you know, our family environment and the environment in which we grow up affects our way of our mental state and our mental development. I think I suppose thinking about it in preparation for this interview, I suppose I was started thinking more about how our communities and society as a whole also affects, and even the global mind, you could say. I mean, on one level, I suppose the internet, I wonder whether that's a kind of expression of the global mind. It's only an aspect of it, isn't it? You know, but I thought also how your nation has a kind of mind, doesn't it? Has a mental state. You know, we talk about the state, but to some extent, I wonder whether, you know, a government expresses the mental state. You know, they're elected in a democracy. They're elected by a majority of people. So to some extent, we elect people whose thinking we respect, or, you know, whose thinking we identify with. So the government, in a sense, expresses the mind of the people to some extent. You know what I mean? If you turn on a national television station, that again gives you a sense of the state of mind of the nation, doesn't it? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. We'll come back to it in a minute. We're just going to a quick ad break, because there's something I want to add on to that. We're going to a quick ad break, and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
So Father Benjamin, just to pick up, we were talking about the community, the news, and mental well-being and that kind of thing. I find that the news can be, and I think you were talking about governments as well.
Yeah.
I think sometimes what government does, and sometimes they have to do things, I understand, because of other effects, like, for example, economically, we're not in a good way. They're having to increase certain things.
Yeah.
Which unfortunately, a side effect of that may affect well-being. Like, you know, bills going up. Sure. And then that means we have to basically limit more what we use and be much more careful. And it does make you feel, I'm sure people feel a bit affected by that. Do you know what I mean?
I think you're absolutely right. I think part of the difficulty is, again, it's seen, people experience it in a much more real and whole way than the government who administers these things sometimes. And I think what people miss is a sense of sympathy or compassion. You know, a government may have to, you know, government may not be able to do only a certain amount to mitigate certain factors like increases in fuel prices, for instance. But I think how much they're aware of the suffering, especially the poorest, but all who are affected by it, you know, their attitude, that makes a huge difference, doesn't it? Again, it's the spirit of things, mm-hmm. mental attitude that the government that or those in authority that's even more, you know, it's even more important than not, well, I shouldn't say more important than money, but it's very important, isn't it? And I think sometimes when people feel that those in authority over them, you know, lack an awareness and I think we saw this during the pandemic a bit, didn't we, really? I mean, Yeah, I mean, I think the cost of living, it's interesting because the cost of living is thought of in terms of money, but I think it's the cost is also anxiety, isn't it? And pain, you know, that's part of the cost. There's an emotional price to pay, isn't there?
Absolutely. I think we put on the news sometimes. I've heard people actually say this to me. They said they don't watch the news as much as they used to because it makes them feel down about stuff
that's
going on.
I think that's a healthy response. As you know, Gavin, I mean, Lent is one of the sort of popular, commonly known ideas about the Christian church season of Lent is people give things up. Well, a few years ago, I tried giving up listening to the radio. I mean, I listened to what is generally thought of as quite a sort of sensible, solid radio program, station. But I did so again this year. And do you know, the funny thing is, I thought I was going to be rather, because I have it on, like some people use the television as a sort of company. But actually this year, I felt much more peaceful without it. And I tried once or twice listening to the news, and I came back to listening to the news the other day. And what I noticed was, there's this great sense of anxiety, really. I mean, a sense of anxiety. It's all quite hurried, quite anxious. The sort of tone is, it's not exactly fearful, but it's something like that, really. And I think, so when you talk about people being affected negatively by it, I think that's absolutely right. I think the spirit is the spirit. I mean, I think there's that phrase, the zeitgeist, the spirit of the time. And I think the spirit of the time is fairly anxious at the moment. And I think, I mean, referring to the news, I'll give you an example of something which I think is when mental not well-being, I don't know if it's mental ill health, but I mean, the news, what the news does quite often is it jumbles things together without any seeming regard for the different weights. So they might have a football result right next to, you know, three people being drowned, including children, you know, an accident or something. There's no pause between them. They just go straight from one to the other with no sense of reverence or respect or different worth. You know what I mean? And I think it jumbles things together in a kind of way that does justice to neither, really. Does that make sense?
Do you think religion helps with mental well-being?
I think I'd like to think that all true religion does. Any practice or faith that helps one connect and worship a God of mercy, a God of love, must help our minds. I think because we're put in touch with that deeper source of life, which is mercy and love and true justice. I think. Of course, fallible, frail humanity, you know, can to some extent distort anything we get our hands on, not just religion. You know, football can be turned into a tribal warfare, can't it? And, you know, it's a game, and yet people can, you know, football supporters of different teams can attack each other. You know, we've seen tragically in Northern Ireland where different Christian denominations have become sort of tribal enemies. That's not Christianity, is it? And it's not Christianity religion doesn't help our mental well-being when it's distorted or when an inaccurate picture of God is presented or instilled in people, or when those entrusted with authority in religious institutions are misused that authority. And we've seen that tragically in recent years in the Christian church, and I imagine it happens in other faiths too. I think true religion, if I may call it that, you know, gives one a deep sense of the meaning and purpose and beauty of life, and of oneself within that, and of other people within that, of all other people, you know, everyone. So it teaches one, we hope, the way of love of life, love of the other person, love of self.
Absolutely. I think with religion as well, talking generally, I think when people come together in commune, you know, in no matter what religion it is, I think they it must improve well-being. I mean, I've seen people in different religions when they attend different events and whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And people say, you know, they come together really happy, you know. So I think religion does help in that sense. Do you know what I mean? The bringing people together. And we all know with mental well-being, it always helps when you've got, as I mentioned earlier, a healthy social circle as well. So I just think that might, I think that's a good thing, you know.
It is good. It's good to come together with other people. I think as long as that doesn't become something which is in a way designed to exclude people, is it really? You know, I think good religion in a sense opens people, both opens us as individuals, but also as, you know, communities, a body of people. It opens us to others. It makes us more inclusive and less exclusive, more including and less excluding. And that's not just people of the faith, but that's people of in need, isn't it? As people who are, you know, wounded, as people whose mental well-being who lack mental well-being, you know. So it makes us more generous, doesn't it, and more open, I think, to others.
No, of course. I mean, have you helped anyone in the church with their mental well-being, or any of your colleagues, or anything like that before?
Well, I hope so. I mean, I think worship itself improves mental well-being. You know, I think prayer, in any true sense, helps mental well-being. So part of my work as a priest is to lead, to encourage people in worship, because that's in a way that's turning, you know, we believe God is love, or God is love, and if we turn towards love, which is what prayer and worship is, and give God glory, we're saying we're so caught up in this way of love, really, which is healing and improves our mental well-being, I think. I mean, obviously, I think most faiths have traditions of care for people who are suffering, you know, mental sickness or trouble or distress or burdens. The Christian church has traditions of prayer for healing, which is, prayer for healing with the laying on of hands, it's called, where the remembering how Jesus healed, he spoke to those in need. He also, he touched them, touched their heads, touched their hands, touched their eyes, sometimes touched, as a sign of the power of God's loving touch to heal and restore, as, you know, as when people in need will put their hand, we put our hands on their shoulders, or we'll hold them, or, you know, so prayer and touch, praying for people, they're not there, we pray for people, you know, I pray daily for people. I mean, I've prayed for some people day after day for years, perhaps sometimes, for their healing. And it's a mystery, isn't it, really, but I think it's also, when we pray for someone, it affects how we are with them. Because I suppose we hope that we're caught up in God's attitude to them. So we learn from him how he is with them, which may be very different to how we think, you know, without God, which is, I mean.
No, totally, totally. Just bear with us. We're just going to a quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
The station that makes you feel good.
So, Father Benjamin, have you had any people that have maybe newly joined the church where you've seen kind of their spirits lift up more?
Well, funny enough, when you were, I was just thinking about the last question, connecting this one. So a young man who came to us 8 or 10 years ago, the sign of his healing, I think, was that he left us. I mean, he moved away to be with his family from whom he'd been separated. I mean, his partner and their son, and he'd seen very little of them for many years, but he then moved to another part of England and set off on his own, really. And so that was a sign really of growth and maturity, I think, and independence and health and strength, really. And he's now, you know, he's working himself in the health sector and helping people himself. He came back to us on Good Friday, fun enough. Now, Gavin, sorry, you asked me particularly about a young person coming, did you say?
No, it could be anyone. And that's a really good example. I said basically any newcomers that have come to the church and you've seen their spirits lift up or, you know, their mental well-being generally improved. And that sounds like a good example. Well, is anyone else?
We had someone recently who came in who he appeared during quite early in the morning one morning, about 8 o'clock in the morning, when I was celebrating morning prayers, we call it, and he wandered around, and I think he's got some burdens, and he was carrying them around, from his mental behaviour. But he came, and so I invited him to come and join the next service, which is the Eucharist, and he did. And I mean, it's funny, isn't it? Interesting, really, because I said to him apologetically at one point, I'm going to sing the psalm. Is that right? Would you like me to say it? Well, he said, no, I like singing. And to my amazement, he sung really fluently. And I thought afterwards, that was a really kind of healing thing, because singing together, we were talking about doing things together, there were good words. And anyway, that was about 2 or 3 months ago. Well, on Easter Day, he was baptized, and which is, a transforming thing. I mean, you probably know that for Christians believe it's being born again. It's a new kind of spiritual birth.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think where our first life, we're born out of our mother's womb, and we're born into an environment, and it has pros and cons, good and bad. But I think the new birth in the life of God, the life of the church, is a new freedom, really, a new beginning. So I think, I'm hoping that for this person, that was a transformation. But I think even the fact that he got there was a sign of progress and change. He'd been part of the Christian community a bit for those 2 months. He'd given quite a lot. He gave us gifts, and I hope he received something from us.
That's fantastic. Fantastic. Have you seen often where people are baptized, you see their life changes basically?
I think so. I mean, that's a really good question, because you'd expect, but I think, of course, it's a subtle thing, isn't it? And it is both an enormous change, but it's also a subtle beginning. It's a mystery, isn't it? I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because we've been celebrating Easter. One of the interesting things about Easter that's been pointed out is Jesus didn't come with a great bang and say, you know, look at me, here I am. He just appeared to a few people who knew him, and they didn't even recognize him to start with, mostly. And those that did were quite, some of them were quite afraid. And I think the new life that we have with God is both dramatic, but it's also subtle. I mean, if I think of myself, I wasn't baptized till I was 30, and my life did change then. But I think these things are, I mean, I think there may be, you know, there may be dramatic changes on the outside, but I think often it's a deep inner change that then works its way, you know, through our lives, really. So I think for the last 36 years, it's been changing me. Michael Ramsay, great, I think, saintly Archbishop of the 1960s and 70s, I think, he was asked, you know, which was the happiest day of his life, and he said the day of his baptism. But he was a baby when he was baptized. But I think what he meant was that's when he you know, received God's spirit and was made new in Jesus, we believe. It's a bit like the Queen saying, you know, she said when she was anointed at her coronation, which is a Christian sign of God's spirit coming upon her to enable to fulfill this task, this way to which she'd been called of monarch. She said that was the most moving moment of her life, you know, and that was the beginning of, you know, what she's about to celebrate in her, what she is already celebrating in her Platinum Jubilee. So I think these God beginnings are both dramatic and but also subtle, I think. Would you say from your own experience of change in your life? I mean, sometimes it's someone says something to you, doesn't it? Or you have an experience and it sinks deep into the one's soul, a bit like a seed, and then it starts growing, doesn't it? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, if people throw their intuition into, I just feel if they throw their intuition to making a decision about, you know, something they want to do or changing their life, and, you know, often it works out the right way, you know. And if it doesn't, some people make a decision and they feel actually maybe this wasn't the right thing, then, you know, it's about refocusing and having to think about again how to move forwards, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's good for people to keep their minds open and free to, you know, they make decisions, try different things, and until they find whatever the route that might be, whether it's career, business, or a hobby, a relationship, or whatever it might be, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of thing. I mean, people go to the gym to improve their physical health. Where do you think we can go to improve our mental well-being?
Well, I think the simple, silly answer is to say we go to God and wherever we find him, really. You know, I mean, it would be too simple to say. I mean, I think if I think of going to church, you know, it is difficult, I think, going to church, because partly, I mean, the tide is going to the gym. If you think of a tide, a current of a river, you know, at different times of history, the tide, the current has flowed in different directions, hasn't it? I mean, and at the moment, if you say you go to gym, well, it goes to the gym, that's normal, isn't it? If you say you go to the church, that's pretty weird, I think. And people, so go to the church would be quite difficult. But I think to some extent, I mean, I think a good Christian service or a good service, perhaps in any true religious institution, incorporates, you know, I've seen round a gym, but I've never actually done the stuff. There's weights, aren't there? There's presses and there's running and various things for doing functions. But I think a good act of worship will incorporate different exercise for the soul. I've got a very nice friend. He's a runner, really, but he's a great teacher of running, and he does these after park run. He does these free stretching sessions. Exercising after a run is very good, prevents injury, and it helps us run. Anyway, I want to say to him sometimes, you know, come along to midday prayer, short service, about 1/4 an hour. And do some stretching for your soul, okay? Because I think a good act of worship would incorporate things equivalent to weights and, you know, some teaching, some words, something from above, you know. And, it, you know, I think, you know, I was just thinking today in preparation for this interview, I was thinking, you know, when someone discovers you're a priest, they, you know, the funny thing, what they often ask, I mean, sometimes they do it tongue-in-cheek or partly joking, but what they're fascinated by is confession. They said, do you do confessions? They say, well, of course, on films and things, they've seen confessions, haven't they? It's one of the sort of stock, is it called tropes nowadays of the priest, you know? But I think, for instance, you know, most of us are sometimes burdened by guilty feelings, not necessarily because we're guilty. I mean, but sometimes we've done things wrong or something's gone wrong. So I think, for instance, making some kind of confession, you know, which is part of many Christian services, is helpful to the soul. These young people who ask about confession, you know, sometimes that things weigh upon them. They want to be free. I mean, of course, baptism is the great freeing thing, really. You know, it's a new start. So mental well-being, I think you know, in the same way, going to the gym, you need to do it regularly, don't you? If you're going to see real progress and change in oneself, commitment. Absolutely. You know, I think yeah. Bishop now Bishop Tomlinson pointed out that, you know, I think the church could say that, you know, if you commit yourself and do this course, if you just said, you know, I sometimes say to people, if you come, you know, come to church for a month, come every Sunday, come for 3 months, and your life will change. You know, it will. And you know, if it changes for the worse or they just get bored, well, stop. But I think most people, if they commit themselves to that, and something good will happen. I think I think the church, for better or worse, has gotten to this way of, you know, just treating it as normal. If people come and go, they're there 1 week and not the next. Well, I think it's doing people a disservice, really, because commitment, you know, is so important, isn't it, really? And we tend to think of commitment in terms of relationships sometimes, but I think commitment to the gym, or if you're doing a sport or any kind of activity, positive activity, commitment engage, it allows the whole person to be much more engaged, doesn't it? We don't think, are we going to do it? The energy starts flowing, you know?
Yeah, totally. No, absolutely. I think also people can go to the library, maybe restaurants with friends or whatever it might be. I think that lifts people's moods as well. I think there's a good few places in the community where people should be open-minded about going, as well as the gym. Obviously, as you mentioned, the church and other people's respective religious institutions. So, you know, combination. Sure.
I mean, I gave you a rather narrow answer. Yeah, I mean, I think what was interesting during the pandemic, of course, someone recently gave me a lovely book of photographs taken of people in parks during the pandemic.
Of course,
And I think people discovered that. I mean, I think sometimes people have said that, you know, Nate, you know, that I don't go to church. I go to a beautiful place. I go to a wood or something. But I think people found in parks that was good for their well-being. Among in nature of some kind helps our true nature to be restored, doesn't it? And I think being with a community of healthy, natural people, that's a kind of nature, isn't it? That's part, because nature's within ourselves as well as, you know, in the trees and gardens and parks and countryside. So I think, you know, I think people found that was good for their mental well-being. It saved them in a way sometimes, didn't it?
Yeah.
And when they were feeling deprived of the nature of people they loved, or people, you know, people who loved them, when they were cut off from family or friends who they longed to see. And
absolutely,
but I think they did, you know, I think they did find, people have found, discovered other ways of, you know, restoring their or maintaining their mental well-being, didn't they? I mean, I think bread making became very popular, didn't it? And creative activities, I think, are vital for some of us. I think these are ways of, you know, I think, you know, the last couple of weeks, I've been amazed how, you know, the work of the church has been good, but it's also demanding, and I feel it can be stressful. But I come back and make pictures at the moment with a camera, but actually that's been incredibly restoring. And I think it made me realize that I think every person has a creative gift, have creative gifts. And I mean, I was thinking about you, Gavin, that when you came to see me last in the church, we had a talk, didn't we? You told me about this radio work you're doing. And I thought, I was thinking today, isn't that part of your creative gift? And I think you seemed happier and more peaceful for it, don't you? I think, isn't that?
Yeah. I feel really good. Like, you know, I talk to a lot of interesting people, obviously like yourself and loads of different people from the community in health sectors and general in sectors. And it gives a lot of wealth of information, knowledge that helps, I'm sure, the listeners, and gives more insight, if you like. So, you know, I just find it, you feel like you're in a way bringing, you know, useful information to people.
Basically. Yeah, but you've got a gift for it, haven't you? And you're using that gift. I mean, I think you've used it to some extent in your other work, but I feel, haven't you found that you have got a gift for it and it's good to give it?
I feel really natural with it. I've had people say that to me as well.
Yeah. You've seen it. And I think that is one's nature. I think, you know, I think discovering one's nature. But I think, you know, I think I was thinking the other day that, you know, Christians believe that, we believe, and other faiths too, I think sometimes, that that we're made in the image of God. We're made in some way like God. Well, God is, you know, for Christians, is a creator as well as a redeemer and someone who sustains life. And I think every person is called to share in that creating. You know, God is creating. I think we're called to be creative people. And perhaps during the pandemic at other times, I think, you know, so I think mental well-being comes through nurturing one's creative side and sharing it, really living it out. And, you know, for some people it'll be, you know, singing or dancing or writing. I mean, but I'm sure there are lots of ways, you know, if you can cook freely without being bound by recipe books and things. I mean, all those are useful, you know. Or, I mean, I think there's as many. I was in a clothes shop the other day and talking to an interesting young man, and I thought, well, I can't imagine spending all day in a clothes shop, nice as it was. And I said to him, well, what do you do? And he said, well, you know, I make music, I record music. I've got, you know, this electronic stuff, and he's got a recording thing in a garage or something. You know, and he goes back and makes his own music, you know.
Which is fantastic.
So, yeah, I mean, but I think many people have these sort of hidden activities and gifts.
Father Benjamin, thank you so much for your time today. We've come to the end of that. Where can people find you? Are you on social media or more someone to visit in the church? Or
well, I mean, I'd be delighted if people want to find me in any way, assuming they're reasonably friendly. I mean, certainly the church. We've got the church's got a website. I'm not on social media. But I can get on it if it's helpful. You know, I could probably find a way. I mean, what would you suggest, Gavin?
No, I mean, if you tell people the address of the website, that'd be brilliant. That's a good start.
Yeah, it. Well, I mean, I just have to check it. It's here. Let's have a look. It's hang on 1 second. Yeah, it's St. George, St. George, one word. Is that slash, you know, like a hyphen Barkingside, Barkingside.co. So stgeorge/barkingside.co.
Is there a .uk at the end of that? Or
no, there isn't. There used to be, but someone else stole that one, so we had to get it off.
No probs, no
but
probs.
It's appropriate because it's the eve of St. George this evening, which is rather nice, isn't it? So the church keeps St. George's Day tomorrow, although the normal date, 23rd, was Saturday, because that was in Easter week. We move it till tomorrow, but it begins this evening. Oh. So it's nice to talk on that happy day.
Lovely, so, brilliant. Thank you so much for your time. Yeah, that's fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Gavin. It's been great. Thanks so much for probing questions and making me think.
No worries. And thank you to our listeners. You know you can find me on Instagram at GavinJ417. Until next time, take care.